37 states have now legalized medical and or recreational marijuana, but government's still trying to catch up to a movement that's defining modern society and filling state government coffers. Cannabis in America, today on 13th and Park.
The future doesn't belong to the faint-hearted.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
We will make America strong again. We will get through this together.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Adam, we've got a really special guest with us today, our partner here at Ballard Partners, Courtney Coppola. Courtney, before joining us, wore a number of different hats in service to the state of Florida. She was, among other things, the deputy chief of staff to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. She was also the chief of staff at the Department of Health during the pandemic, which was no small task. So had some really big jobs there. But as it relates to what we're talking about today, Courtney was the director of Florida's medical marijuana program when Florida licensed the very first regulated marijuana companies. In that time, they also registered more than 500,000 patients and enrolled thousands of certifying physicians, which has created one of the largest marijuana markets in the country. Even though Florida does not currently have adult use, it's only for medicinal use. So we're just thrilled to have Courtney with us today. We got a lot of ground to cover. This is going to be like a mini graduate course in cannabis politics. So let's start at the federal level. One big thing that people, remember, but also forget sometimes is cannabis is still illegal at the federal level. It has not been legalized, even though many states have passed both adult use and recreational use. What's the status of Congress addressing the fact that so many states have now legalized cannabis? What's the status of that in Congress?
That's a great question, and one that we've seen kind of year over year recently and never ultimately made it across the finish line. But I think one that could make progress this year. Safe banking, the newest version maybe called Safe Plus, giving access to capital markets for what is right now a federally illegal business, but is legal in, I think, 19 states medically and 19 states adult use, and more coming online every day. It has so far not been successful, but we think despite the appetite, don't know if there's political will to get it done before the election, but maybe in December, looking at a version of that Safe Plus to bring around access to those capital markets and financial
right, because cannabis is still illegal at the federal level, these businesses that are operating under state law don't have access to a lot of the typical financial services and capital markets that a typical business would be allowed to have. So this Safe Act would allow that. But if I understand what you're saying is that maybe not before the election, but maybe a post-election, a lame duck session in December, there might be an opportunity for that bill to pass after we get beyond the elections.
You got it. Looking at hopefully December and making progress on that issue, obviously moving from completely federally illegal to a regulated business. I think incremental steps are important, and access to capital markets and financial services will be a huge step, all the way from, you know, PPP loans, small business loans, to being able to open up a bank account like any other business would be able to.
Because this is like, you're talking about without that, Justin, it's an all cash business, right? Now, this is a major league industry that's forced into being an all cash business. That doesn't sound all that safe. Right? That's why I like the word safe banking.
That's right.
And it doesn't sound quite right. I mean, if you want it to be legitimate and you want it to be, you know, to be able to grow appropriately, how can you force the entire effort into, you know, a $100 bill or whatever you have, you know, in your hand? So I think this is something that clearly the time has come for us to do some kind of reform. I understand, Courtney, you told us earlier, it's been in play for a couple of years, the discussion about this. You know, I think the prediction has to be, please get something like that passed so we can make this healthier, more legitimate, more transparent, more open. Now, I want to ask about the word hemp. I'm really confused because I hear hemp. you know, hemp goes to like clothing, I think into furniture. But hemp was what was passed, right, Courtney, and the original Farm Bill. So tell us a little bit about that.
So in 2018, hemp was federally legalized by the Farm Act. And anything that is hemp derived having less than 0.3% of Delta-9 THC was legal. And I think what we're seeing now regarding Delta-8 is where we're seeing a lot of maybe an unintended loophole in the cannabis market. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely correct. Hemp is a great textile. Innovations coming regarding building infrastructure and, of course, other topical or health and wellness products. But I think we're seeing maybe under education on the cannabis plant itself and its derivatives and how it can be derived into other products and synthesized into other forms of THC.
Right, because I was traveling this summer. I was in North Carolina. I was in Asheville, North Carolina, and I'm walking around downtown Asheville. I'd never been there before. And there was a store, and they had a big sign up there, Delta 8 was being advertised. And I think I saw a few stores like that. I'd never actually heard the term before, but that's exactly what you're talking about. So these products are being sold that do have a euphoric effect because they were, I guess, inadvertently included into that 2018 Farm Bill. So what do you think is going to happen going forward? Is there any legislation that's been filed already that would deal with this unintended loophole and what might happen in the future?
Absolutely. In July of this year, we saw Senator Schumer propose a bill that would, among many other cannabis reforms, address the definition of THC to be total THC as opposed to very specific to Delta 9. What we're seeing, though, is...
So that would include Delta 8 as well.
That's correct.
Okay.
Total THC, meaning Delta 8 and Delta 9 THC, more inclusive of a total THC in the product and a limit on that THC.
You know, it just reminds me, Justin, of Pam Bondi when she was Attorney General in Florida, when she kept trying to outlaw some of these synthetic drugs that they were marketing at, like the local 7-Eleven. You know, they had nice names like cotton candy, right? which was enticing, among other things, children, and which was totally wrong. But every time they passed a law to stop the sale of the cotton candy, the synthetic scientist would change one little molecule or something in the formula, right, Courtney? And then they put it back on the market under, you know, some other cotton candy list or something. Is this kind of similar, the whole Delta 8, Delta 9, and the unintended consequences? Because Congress never wanted to approve of an hallucinogenic as a part of the package.
No, I think you're spot on. I don't think the intention of the Farm Bill was to legalize THC in unlimited quantities, forms, packaging, how you can market it. What we're seeing is really an emerging public health crisis because these products, at very stark contrast to regulated cannabis markets, are heavily tested. Packaging is extremely prescriptive, always in childproof containers, and can't be marketed to children. And it varies state to state on what those standards are, but broad strokes, always tested packaging and marketing standards, and of course, limiting on who the customer can be. In this case, they are at grocery stores. Mm-hmm. You can buy it online and order it anywhere. You don't know what's not in it. If you know, there could be nothing in it, or there could be dangerous things in it. We don't know how or what products were used to concentrate it. Delta 8 is what they call a minor cannabinoid, so does not appear in large quantities. In order to get it at that concentration and that volume, there is very serious processing that would happen. And without standards for testing of residual solvents, other ingredients, proper labeling, packaging, and of course, safety concerns, all of that right now is being sold across our country, online and in person, with no oversight.
Well, I know we want to turn to Florida, but before we leave the federal level, what's the outlook of the Schumer bill and then beyond with the possible amendment to the Farm Bill?
So interesting, 2018, 5 years ago. So I think you'll see that revision, at least on that definition, when we revisit Farm Bill in 2023. I think you have to address it then. The FDA, these products are being marketed today in violation of current FDA rules. They even have pages dedicated to reporting adverse incidents, knowing what are in these products and cautioning consumers. I don't think you get a bite at revisiting Farm Bill in 2023 and don't attempt at correcting the definition issue. Exactly.
I know this is a strange question. Why did they say, call it Delta 8, Delta 9? I mean, Delta Airlines is furious, I'm sure. They keep getting it.
You know, that's a really great question. I'm sure a chemist much smarter than me can explain exactly why you would use that symbol and, of course, naming it in its molecular compounds. But that is interesting. I haven't heard Delta.
Probably comes from chemistry.
Yeah, because I'm sure the Delta people said, hey, how about JetBlue? Why can't it be JetBlue 3, right? It has to be Delta 8 anyway. Right.
Well, that's why you see all these Corona beer ads since Corona with Snoop Dogg.
Right.
They've got a big branding problem. So maybe Delta may want to get Snoop Dogg to advertise for them too.
Well, moving to Florida, as you teed it up. There is a move afoot that was made public about, I think, 5 weeks ago, that a measure is moving towards the Florida ballot to approve of what most people will call recreational use of marijuana. Those in the industry, I know Courtney's smiling at me, adult use of marijuana. Tell us what obstacles, if any, that measure would face, because if you see polling today, Courtney, polling generally in Florida and many other places is relatively favorable towards the use of recreational marijuana.
There are, especially, I mean, in many states, everyone immediately jumps to the voters in that 60% threshold, which is an intense threshold and a high bar. But there are steps even before then, starting with the Supreme Court and ensuring the language even makes it to the ballot and it's not misleading to voters. And that's one hurdle that previous attempts at an adult use amendment they've failed. Of course, you have signature gathering, which we've seen this attempt already make an investment in that space of $1.5 million to collect signatures. And then, of course, ultimately that 60% threshold at the ballot.
So there's the petitioners have started. They're going to attempt to get a ballot amendment on to change the Florida Constitution in the November 2024 elections. They got to collect the petitions, the signatures from voters, and they also have to get the approval from the Supreme Court, which has been the sticking point in the past.
Absolutely.
Right.
Which we know that if the court said they collect the signatures, they do all the effort, and the court says, we think this one line is not quite, you know, appropriate or it's misleading. They go back to square one,
right?
This
is start all over again.
It's a crazy game, I hate to call it that, where you have to go all the way forward and keep your fingers crossed that the first and most important voters you've got are the justices in the Florida Supreme Court who are going to say this is okay. It's, you know, single subject and it's appropriate.
What's the scope and scale of the Florida cannabis market right now? How many licenses are there? Because right now we're just medical. How many patients have cards? And what's the future outlook for issuance of new licenses?
And that's actually, of course, there's the process of completing an amendment, collecting the signatures, making it on the ballot. The current market, I think, also will largely influence the success of any future adult use amendment. We currently have 22 vertically integrated operators in Florida. The department is currently
the Florida Department of Health.
Yes,
right.
Excuse me. The Office of Medical Marijuana Use is currently reviewing applications for one specific license type called the Pigford application, and the department, while they were awaiting a Supreme Court approval of the regulatory structure, that mandatory vertical and limited license structure that we have in Florida, the department has 22 licenses remaining to be issued because we have 740,000 qualified active patients in Florida. And the way our regulatory structure works, each time you hit a new 100,000 patients, four more licenses become available. Well, that whole time the department was awaiting the approval from the Supreme Court upholding our regulatory structure, the department has 22 available to issue.
So what does it cost to get a license?
So for the Pigford round?
It's like a driver's license. You know, it costs me 50 bucks to get my license. What does it cost, for a license itself?
I'll start. The application fee for the most recent round was $146,000. Mm-hmm. I would say that is not reflective of the true cost to be a competitive applicant in Florida. In Florida, the application specifically asks for to prove your technical ability and prove what resources you already have to begin operating. So for a cultivation facility, the very first prompt asks, do you have one? So there are folks who are looking at making investments in cultivation facilities, processing facilities, and even dispensing facilities, even though the need for those facilities is very much down the road. they want to prove that they are strong and ready operators. So the cost, of course, is the application fee, but it's the team to put it together, the lawyers, the application writers, the subject matter experts that will run that, you know, your master grower, whoever's going to run your processing lab.
So it requires a significant investment even before you apply for the license. That's where the true cost is.
Absolutely.
But Florida is uniquely positioned, right, Courtney, because of where we are. When I say we're Floridians, versus, say, Massachusetts. The reason this state is such an attractive market, right, is has to do with the weather as well. So when you talk about cultivating, it's hard to cultivate cannabis, well, that's say marijuana, cannabis in the 20-degree minus weather of Boston, Massachusetts, right, in certain months of the year. So is that why this is such, Florida is such a big deal, you might say, in the cannabis movement today?
Absolutely. So for many reasons, our access to ports, our climate, even where just geographically we're located within the United States, there are down the road strong potential for applicants who have a good stronghold in Florida if or when there is ever the ability to transport cannabis across state lines. Of course, right now, each state is required to set up its structure exclusive to that state. You can't move it across state lines, but we talked about kind of the progress we see on federal legalization. Hopefully some of that will evolve too. And if you are strategically located in Florida, I think that would be a benefit to a lot of folks. We were talking about the constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Adult use would create, we have 700,000 patients, 750,000 active patients today. Well, there are 21 million Floridians in Florida. Of course, not all of them maybe at an adult use age, but a significant population.
Right.
So when we're thinking about the constitutional amendment, who is supporting it, and its likelihood of success, at the same time, the department is on the brink of adding 22 more operators. Those operators right now have access to 750,000 qualified active patients. But if adult use passes, they'll have access to a full adult use market in Florida.
So just so I'm clear, so the next licenses will be issued by under current law once there are 800,000 registered patients, and right now we're at around 750,000.
They should happen any day now.
Hopefully. Oh, any day now. Okay.
The department, like I mentioned, is currently processing the Pigford application. And there is just one department. It would be very difficult to do a Pigford batch and a general application batch simultaneously. They started with the Pigford application cycle. Hopefully that will be resolved soon. And because in May of last year, the Supreme Court upheld our regulatory structure, that was the green light to go and license those 22 available licenses. Or it's 22 today. Mm-hmm. So as soon as Pigford is resolved, you could expect the department to be moving forward with the general application cycle.
In many other states, they tax, you know, cannabis. That is not necessarily in play in Florida at this point. Who makes that call?
So the Florida legislature, in our case, because we are a very comprehensive medical program, patients have to see and have an in-person physical exam with a qualified physician. It is a medicine, and we are a medical program, and we do not tax medicine. And so currently, there is no additional marijuana tax specific for products purchased under the Office of Medical Marijuana Uses Program.
But is it possible that if this constitutional amendment passes in 2024, if they get the signatures, they get through, and the voters reach the 60% threshold, what do you think the possibilities are for the adult use part to be taxed and not the medical use?
I would definitely say there's higher probability, and that's consistent what we see in other markets. Medical use is providing access to a medicine to patients with qualifying conditions.
Right.
Folks who would like access to cannabis products for a recreational purpose or for adult use, typically we see those programs more heavily taxed.
Mm-hmm. So I think maybe we can close this by, I want to make an observation and ask a question, which is, you've gotten your hands involved in all sorts of things. You're very serious stuff. I mean, you wore these eight hats, including, again, you know, the emergency shelters. What do you do for your own recreation? What do you do when you're not working 23 hours a day?
I'm blessed. State service gets a bad rep being a bureaucrat. But best opportunity, coolest job, of course, other than maybe Ballard, but coolest job I'll ever have. But it does come with a more relaxing schedule than the usual 18-hour days. But I'm new to it. It's only been 7 months. So I'm you know, taking household projects and going and visiting family that are really pretty close, but I hadn't had the time for the couple hours drive. Of course, seeing friends that 18 hours a day is not really conducive to making quick trips to see friends. So really enjoying the ability, and even if we're working, the ability to work other places, come visit the DC office, and just enjoying that flexibility and kind of being able to embrace life, work, the work-life balance outside of a desk.
Well, it's great to have you as a partner here at Ballard Partners, and thanks for taking time to talk to us and give us that mini graduate course in political cannabis.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
So, Justin, you know, I was really, again, I was looking forward to that, like no one's business, to learn more about, you know, the cannabis industry, where it is, where it's going. I'm still stuck, though, on hemp, right? Because that is something that's used in all these everyday things. And when they passed the Farm Bill, we learned in 18, right, and they talked to it, and hemp was, you know, the thing they focused on, they had no idea how that was going to be taken way beyond initial.
Right. Well, there's some creative individuals out there, some creative farmers or chemists, and they read the bill and they realized, oh, there's an opportunity to do Delta 8, which has a euphoric effect. And like Courtney said, you have to concentrate a lot of that material, those chemicals, into that product. But like, I think what we heard her say was that there was a bill that Schumer, Senator Schumer, filed this year, in July of 2022, that would address that loophole, and that even if that bill doesn't pass this year, which the outlook right now isn't good, that farm bill has to be reauthorized, or it sunsets after 5 years. So Congress is going to have to come back in 2023. And I am assured, or I believe that they won't let that happen again, because they've already got the better definition that encompasses all THC products in the bill that Schumer filed this year.
Well, one of the things we didn't talk about was criminal justice reform has been a big part of this movement too. And it's been on both sides, Republican and Democrat, actually, in trying to lessen sentences for nonviolent offenders, and drug use being one of those ideas. And I remember the conversation I had with Courtney about, she was talking about not just decriminalizing cannabis, but maybe the idea of a federal clemency board as one way to try to move some of those, again, nonviolent offenders out of prison.
Yeah, this has been in many states. This has been an important part of the cannabis legislation that's been filed. And in Senator Schumer's bill that he filed this year in the summer of 2022, there is an expungement of records and those type of issues that deal with the so-called war on drugs, and how some of these very nonviolent minor, what we now consider minor drug possession offenses, are being dealt with. And so they're looking back on the expungement issue that you've seen in other states.
Right.
So yeah, no, I think it's interesting. I think that if you look at where the country was 10 years ago, if you look at where Congress was, I think the other important point she made was that change at the federal level isn't going to happen all at once.
Yep.
That's going to happen incrementally. So maybe the Safe Banking Act gets passed in the lame duck session in 2022, and that will be a big step for the industry. And then there'll be another step after that. But I think it's going to happen, if it does happen, one step at a time.
All I know is I'm probably going to get some communication from Delta Airlines from my comments about Delta 8 and Delta 9. Great to be with you as always. We're thrilled, obviously, that Courtney is a member of our team and of America's team when it comes to cannabis. And stay tuned, because I think the Florida verdict in 24 on recreational use of marijuana is going to be another watershed moment.
It will be. And as she pointed out, the Florida Supreme Court is going to have to approve that ballot language. The proponents of it are going to have to go get signatures before they even get to the Supreme Court decision. So that'll be interesting to see. But if it does get on the ballot, even though there's a 60% requirement, voters have to approve it, it stands a good chance, especially if there isn't any well-funded opposition to that. But we'll have to wait and see what happens. I think the other interesting thing that Courtney mentioned that we talked to her about was there's somewhat of a backlog of licenses that the state has, and that once they hit that 800,000 patient threshold for medical cannabis in Florida, there'll be four new licenses that the state of Florida is going to administer. But when you asked her about the cost of how much does it cost, the cost isn't necessarily, it's like, I think she said $147,000 to apply with the state of Florida for the license. But the cost is in building the infrastructure and acquiring the infrastructure you need to have a competitive application. So if people people are going to put that together. But the other interesting thing is that we learned is that it's not taxed. Right now, of all the cannabis that's being sold in the state of Florida, there is no tax on it because it's considered a medicine, because it's a medical program. But we'll have to wait and see if that adult use passes in 2024. Will the Florida legislature, will the governor, whoever the governor is at that time, want to impose a tax on that adult use?
Boy, have we come a long way.
The idea about thinking
about legalization of marijuana. You know, I still think back in the days of Cheech and Chong, right? We weren't exactly necessarily mainstream, right? And now, you know, the world's changed and everyone's trying to get with it and do the right thing, frankly.
It's a different world indeed.
So great to be with you again on 13th and Park. Just another interesting conversation and experience. I look forward to many more.
More to come.
Okay. Be good, my friend.
Thank you.